Hello, and welcome to Civility and Solutions, a podcast brought to you by your Court Services section of the Supreme Court of Ohio. I am your host, longtime justice enthusiast Kate Munger. This is a podcast about inspirational ideas for courts from across our 88 beautiful Ohio counties. We are so happy to be able to use this platform to share solutions and challenges with courts and to any listeners who may want to stay on the cutting edge of dispute resolution and court services issues. The views expressed by the guests to this podcast don't necessarily express the views of the Supreme Court. Today's episode relates to dispute resolution. Dispute resolution is an important, wide-reaching, and wildly good-looking niche of the legal world that seeks to solve problems without litigation. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 1. Our topic is school attendance, using mediation to strengthen school-family relationships. Joining me today, socially distant but intellectually close, are Dr. Donis Bolden and April Nelson, Esquire. Thank you both for being here today. Dr. Bolden has worked with America's youth for over 25 years. During this time, he has worked in both a collegiate setting and in a K-12 environment, shaping the minds of future leaders. Serving as counselor, intervention specialist, a dean of students, and currently as assistant principal of Delaware Hayes High School. Good afternoon, Dr. Bolden.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Munger. How are you?
Great. Dr. Bolden, you received not one, not two, but three separate degrees from Ohio University. Have they named a building there after you yet?
No. And hopefully they don't, because that means I'm either dead or I've made an incredible amount of money and have had nothing to do but donate it back to the university.
What degrees did you obtain from Ohio University?
A Bachelor of Science in Elementary Education, a Master's of Science in Education Administration, and then a Doctorate of Education as well, with special emphasis areas in counseling, communication studies, and education administration.
That's a mouthful. That's a lot of degrees, sir.
I'm blessed. I'm truly blessed.
Yep. Fun fact, when I was prosecutor in Delaware County, assistant prosecutor for the juvenile division, I subpoenaed you as a witness for a couple juvenile cases. Isn't that always great when you get that pink paper in the mail?
It is. And it makes me wonder, oh my gosh, they finally caught me running that red light or something. So,
Dr. Bolden, for our listeners, what's something that you really like about your current job?
Interacting with students and families and the staff, there's not a day that goes by that is the same when you're working in a high school environment. The situations may appear to be similar, but because some of the players change, so too must your approach, so too must your interaction. And so I never have the same day. And so I really look forward to doing something new and working with a new set of people every day.
That's great. Do you enjoy that the school colors for the Delaware Pacers are very similar to the team colors for the Cleveland Browns?
You know, I am an avid Browns fan, and I never really paid attention in terms of orange and black versus orange and brown. But I now that you bring it up, I guess that makes me even more of a Pacer fan, because I love the Browns. So, yes.
I want to introduce our other guest today. April Nelson actually has a Lifetime Achievement Award named after her. The United Way of Delaware County renamed its Lifetime Achievement Award after her in 2015. She has been a longtime volunteer at the Free Legal Clinic at the Andrews House in Delaware, Ohio, as well as a lot of other volunteer work. And she's worked in the mediation department of the Delaware County Juvenile Court for 9 years. Welcome, April.
Thank you, Kate.
April, when did you become a lawyer?
Decades ago. Like many of us, I went to law school right out of undergraduate. My law school graduation was in 1981, so I've been at it for 40 years almost.
What kind of law did you practice before working at the juvenile court?
Actually, I started practicing law in the traditional sense when I moved back to Delaware in 1990. Traditional small town general practice. My niche areas were zoning and real estate development, which I loved. I also had a specialty practice in school law where I represented families and students in suspension hearings, expulsion hearings, attendance hearings. So those were two, and then like everybody else, nonprofits, small business, you name it, I did it.
That's great. What does your current job entail?
Well, I'm one of a three-person mediation department at Juvenile Court. Delaware County Juvenile Court has at this point, going on 30-year tradition of having a mediation department. It started back under Judge Thomas Loudon. Originally, it was conceived to work in the family area. Back then, of course, we had jurisdiction over child support, unmarried parents, things like that. My focus in the last 9 years has been primarily in the attendance mediation area, which we've seen a huge jump in that. We also do a lot of mediation with first-time juvenile offenders.
What drew you to mediation?
Probably what drew me to mediation, and I started in the mediation area before I came to juvenile court, was what I think draws a lot of attorneys. We look for ways to resolve situations without going to court. You're a former prosecutor. I did not practice in your arena, but when you practice in the civil arena, the last thing you ever want to do is be in court with a client. It's expensive. It's stressful on the client. You can destroy your client's life by going to court. So I was always very interested in alternative dispute resolution. When I closed my practice in 2005, I was fortunate enough to join Judge David Sunderman down in municipal court to create a mediation department down there because he was very interested in looking at ways to free up and speed up their civil docket. So that's kind of where I got immersed in mediation was actually with Dave Sunderman.
What kind of advice would you have for someone who's looking into being a mediator?
It depends on whether they're a lawyer or a non-lawyer. If they're a non-lawyer, I encourage them to take the basic training, sit in on mediations. Mediation isn't for everybody. If they're a lawyer, I heavily emphasize sit in on mediations before you go that route because lawyers, and especially if they have a lot of court experience by nature, we tend not to be mediators. We tend to be adversarial. And sometimes there's a real friction when a lawyer makes that jump. I remember when Magistrate Palanda did mediation training for the small claims court, he did it to get an overview and he stumbled out of that first day of training saying, I get it. I think it's fascinating. Don't ever, ever put me in a mediation and make me mediate.
So both of you were set to present about school attendance at the dispute resolution conference. Are you ready to dive back into that topic on this new podcast platform today?
Absolutely.
I hope so.
All right. Well, any discussion of the intersection of schools and courts has to start with House Bill 410, right?
Correct.
House Bill 410 was enacted in 2017. Mm-hmm. What did House Bill 410 do?
I'm going to take the lead on this one, and Adonis, jump in at any point. And Kate, I'm going to just go slightly sideways. When Adonis and I conceived this program, you know, those proposals were due back in the late fall. We put together what did attendance and attendance law look like back then? Where do we go from there? Obviously, House Bill 410 is a cornerstone of all that. As we're going to talk later, we're not in that world anymore, but House Bill 410 still is the law of Ohio. House Bill 197 did not impact or change its terms, although the Ohio Department of Education has sent out a number of notices about the COVID-19 reactions. But here's the big thing about House Bill 410. This is why I'm an enthusiast for House Bill 410. I was when it was enacted, which was not the reaction across the schools. House Bill 410, to me, the beauty of it is it requires schools to engage with families. They can no longer just say, and this was certainly not true in Delaware anyway, but it was all too easy for a school district to say to a family or a student with attendance issues, you know what, We've already talked to the prosecutor. We're going to file against you. You're charged with truancy. House Bill 410 says you can't do that anymore, schools. You have an affirmative obligation under the law to reach out to families, to have these meetings, to look at not what is wrong with this student and why isn't this student in class, but what can we do as a school to figure out what the barriers are and how do we, the school, support this family and student to improve attendance. I think that was a major change in philosophy. House Bill 410 decriminalized truancy with the attitude of the last thing we want to do to struggling families and students is threaten them with jail time, threaten them with court consequences, when we know darn well there are lots of reasons that lead to attendance. So that to me is what House Bill 410, it sets out very clear objectives that a school district has to follow before they can ever turn to a court and say, we need to file charges against this family or the student.
And it changed some definitions too, didn't it? As far as what is a habitual truant?
Well, what it actually did is it removed the language of truancy altogether. But it went to, as you put out, what a habitual truant is, and it set up a structure of looking at hours. And that was one of the big changes in House Bill 410. Before that, schools looked at attendance in terms of days, half days, quarter days. House Bill 410 said, no, we look at hours. And it actually set up a structure of the one that we hit most often in Delaware County, 72 unexcused hours. And I really want to emphasize unexcused hours in one school year. That was a total change of attitude towards, what are we looking at in a student?
Dr. Bolden, is there anything you wanted to add about House Bill 410 or how it impacted school districts?
I think that from my perspective, it enhanced or required a greater level of onus of accountability. Accountability from all stakeholder groups, being families, schools, and most importantly, the student. It put us all in a room together. We were able to discuss and identify some of the reasons why a student wasn't coming to school or some of those other barriers that may have been in place at school that may have encouraged the student to stay at home. So for me, House Bill 410 certainly enhanced accountability for everyone. And so for me, I am truly ecstatic about the implications and the ramifications of House Bill 410, because now we are able to have that conversation that wasn't traditionally taking place.
All right. So I heard a lot of different reasons for students missing school when I was prosecuting juvenile truants in Delaware County. And the reasons aren't always what you would think. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Various and sundry. Different types of reasons, depending on a family, as well as resources of that particular family, those all influence why a student would miss school.
And what are some things you've heard that are myths about why students might be absent?
Sure. So one of the things that oftentimes, as an educator, I might hear from other individuals throughout the community is that parents don't care or that the kids are bad. And I always say it's not a matter of the parents not caring or the students are bad, but sometimes these parents and some of these students even, they just lack the appropriate resources to combat the different challenges of which they're facing. You know, another myth that I might hear in my role is that kids don't care and kids are lazy. Again, I'm quick to say, our students are stuck and neutral is easy to manage. When you're dealing with so many different factors that are shaping your life, and some of those factors may be outside of your control, Kate, it's easy to get yourself and find yourself in a position to where you just literally give up. And so oftentimes that's what we see with our students, is that there's so many things going on in their lives that we haven't necessarily provided them with the skill set and all of the necessary tools to successfully manage those different issues. One of the things that I'm quick to remind my colleagues about, I'm quick to remind parents about, and even community members about, is that we're working with a select group of students, and they're called teenagers, right? And a teen would be anyone between the ages of, let's just say, 12 up to 19. Well, for anyone who is an avid reader, for anyone who believes in research and supports science, all of the scientific data at our disposal tells us that the adolescent brain doesn't develop until the age of 25, which means that this group of students that we're working with from 12 all the way up to 19, guess what? They're going to think and process things differently than what we would as 30, 40, 50, 60 year old adults.
What do you say to people who say that there's nothing schools can do to improve attendance? It's up to the parents.
Well, first I would say that is completely inaccurate. But before I divulge further into my explanation, I want to give my colleague April an opportunity to chime in, because I know after working with her for so long, you know, there's something that she wants to add.
I like that lead in, Adonis. Actually, I want to go back to something he said about one of the myths is these parents don't care, they're bad parents. And I was thinking, as Adonis was saying that, I have probably done in the last 9 years easily over 1,000 school mediations spread across those 9 years. In 1,000 plus mediations, I have had maybe two that the parent actually said and meant it, I don't care. I don't care about my kid being in school. I don't care about school. I hated it. And yeah, you could take the cynical approach and say, well, the others just aren't telling you that. But that's not it. These parents, and also going back to what Adonis said, these kids do care. So that whole myth, when I hear someone say, well, they're just a bad parent, I have met almost no just bad parents. It's more what Adonis says, the lack of resources, trying to fit all the pieces together. You know, you see certain trends in why kids are absent. At the end of the 2018-2019 school year, the number one reason for absence across the county, K through 12, was anxiety and depression. That was the number one reason across the board. My colleagues, we all saw it, we're tracking it.
So in returning to your question, Kate, when schools take the position that they can improve attendance, one of the things that I always say to people is that school attendance is not one person's job. It's a true partnership that requires participation from all stakeholder groups. And those stakeholder groups include the student, the school, the family, and the courts. So if all four of us are working together, that's how we effectively improve absence-related issues as it pertains to school. And the other thing that I would add as a representative of the school community is that we cannot underestimate the importance of students establishing meaningful and personal relationships with someone at that school. It doesn't necessarily have to be an administrator. It can be a teacher. It could be a custodian. It may even be a bus driver or a cook or cashier. But one of the things that we're finding as we continue to do this most important work with this particular group of students is that we've got to find a way to make our students feel connected and feel a part of that school environment. There's some interesting research out there. And for those of you who are big into TED Talks, I want to direct you to a TED Talk that was done by Rita Pearson. One of the things that Rita Pearson says is that every student must have a champion that believes in him or believes in her. And it is our role, it is our job as school personnel members to be that champion for each student.
April, are there some things that House Bill 410 mandates that schools do to involve themselves in the truancy question?
Well, going back to the mandate, and this though ties directly to what Adonis was talking about, is House Bill 410 sets out some mandated steps the school must meet in order to proceed through an attendance issue. First of all, and this goes back to your comment about defining a habitual truant, and the law sets it out in terms of hours. First of all, once that student hits that mark of habitual truancy, the school has a 7-day window to make what they call meaningful attempts, and that's the language of the statute, meaningful attempts to reach the family. Now realize the schools are reaching out long before that, and our court, and we have a rather unique program, we're reaching out before that. But once the student hits that habitual truant standard, the school absolutely is mandated to reach out for that, make those meaningful attempts. The school then 14 days must develop what is called a student absence intervention plan, SAIP. And that's often the point of the mediation, is to develop that SAIP. But the language of House Bill 410 is very clear. If the school cannot bring the family in on the discussion, the school is required to go ahead and create that absence intervention plan. And that would address some of the things that Adonis was talking about. Oh, maybe there's a transportation issue. Maybe there's the family has been displaced and is homeless. What can the school do to put social support in there? Once that SAIP is in place, and it must be mailed to the family if they have not participated, they have to get notice of it, then the school has to wait 61 calendar days and monitor attendance before the school can turn to the courts and say, we need to file on this family because this child is not coming to school. So there are some steps the school must talk to, but I think, again, and Adonis touched on this, what House Bill 410 says is you, the school, have to be proactive now. And you know, Delaware City Schools has, my experience has been a lot of proactivity. They didn't need House Bill 410. That just gave them more to stand on. But I think House Bill 410 made other school districts maybe not as proactive realize, oh, wait a minute, we're a partner in this. And we have families we need to reach out to and try to solve this.
Dr. Bolden, to that point, what are some challenges facing school districts that might surprise the listeners that don't work in this area? I think you guys have touched on mental health and homelessness engagement. What else are the school districts really focused on currently?
Sure. Well, first, let me say there are a myriad of challenges that we face as a school. With that being said, I will say this, that COVID-19 has presented yet another challenge for us. Right. So in addition to what I'm going to call, for the sake of this particular discussion, our traditional challenges, and some of those traditional challenges include dealing with trauma, both reported forms of trauma as well as unreported forms of trauma, managing social media behaviors, a change in the graduation requirements for the state of Ohio, an increase in substance abuse, both of those of family members as well as that of students. And so in addition to that, you know, what COVID-19 has done, it has forced us to begin to look at things differently, right? Some of those other challenges now, Kate, that we are experiencing are work obligations and financial commitments of families, right? So now students are making a decision like, she's, you know, my mom, my dad, my grandmother, my grandfather, my aunt, my uncle, whomever it is that I'm living with, they might be laid off. And so our income has been reduced. So I know Kroger's is hiring. I know Myers is hiring. Walmart is hiring. I need to go and get a job so that I can contribute to the family financially. We're also looking at things in terms of the change in the family dynamics. You know, some of our students now, because of COVID-19, have been sent away to live with different relatives in different parts of the state. So we might have a student who is a Delaware City School student, but guess what? They may be living with an aunt in Cleveland right now. Why? Because that particular branch of the family has more resources available and they're able to better support that particular student. One thing that oftentimes gets overlooked in a situation like this, Kate, which again is yet another challenge that our district and all districts for that matter are facing, is food instability. When school is in session, the kid might grab a bowl of cereal and a banana or a Pop-Tart or something from home. Then they go to school. That student might eat lunch at school and or they may pack their lunch. And then when they get home, there's usually an expectation that someone will provide dinner. Depending on the student's schedule, they might have a sports requirement or an after hours requirement such as work or anything of that nature. But what COVID-19 is doing now is this student is at home and will need three meals a day. Another challenge that a lot of our families are forced to deal with right now are what we call at-home responsibilities, because one parent may still need to report to work in various capacities. Our student is now tasked with the role of being a child care provider for his or her younger siblings. So again, social emotional learning, those challenges are becoming far and greater. Mental health issues, those challenges are becoming far and greater. So there's a myriad of different issues, some of which we were dealing with prior to COVID-19, and some of which have become exacerbated as a result of COVID-19. The challenge for us as educators is this, is none of us have, or very few of us have ever been in a pandemic before, right? So all of this is brand new. And I'll use the phrase that is circulating around society now. It's kind of like building an airplane while you're flying it. So there's just a lot of trial and error in the process of all of this that's going on. But one of those things is reaching out directly to families. You know, sometimes that means picking up the phone and calling the mom. If the mom doesn't answer, going down that calling list of emergency contacts, trying to get a hold of an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, a neighbor, someone who has access to the family to let that student know that the schools are concerned, the teachers are concerned, first and foremost, just for their well-being. Secondly, and of course, is just the academic piece. But the other challenge that this pandemic has created for us is that it's forced a lot of schools to instantaneously adopt a virtual learning model. The problem with that is that all of our students exhibit different types of learning styles. So you have those students who are visual learners. You have those students who are oral learners. You have those students who are hands-on. And right now, we're just being forced to teach in one particular model or module, and that's online visual. So again, trying to figure out what works best for each student and his or her unique learning style, and then trying to supplement some instruction that meets that student where he is or where she is.
And for both of you, what are some things that you would encourage schools and courts to prepare for in the 2021 school year, you know, looking forward to attendance? And is attendance going to be more important? Do we see any challenges on the horizon after this pandemic and coming back from this?
You know, and the best way to come up with an answer is to look at where we were in the old world. This time of year, we would be at our heaviest mediation levels. All three of us would be mediating around the clock, all three of us at court. And I talked about this on March 10th when this conference was canceled. I had 23 school mediations over the next 3 weeks in different school districts. On March 16th, in the space of a half hour, I canceled all 23 because schools were closed. And Adonis and I have had this discussion, picking back those pieces up when we head into the 2020-2021 school year. First of all, how relevant is it to go back and pick up those 23 canceled mediations? I'm not sure it is anymore, and that's not to minimize the importance of attendance, but our lives and our community and our institutions have changed so much, you've got to ask, do we start fresh? But Kate, from a court viewpoint, and our judge, David Hemanowski, has been having court meetings along this line, we don't know when, as a court, we're going to be fully operational again. We're not going to spring back into life in early May. We're going to work on skeleton basis for some time. Most of us are working remotely. Certainly Governor DeWine and Adonis can speak to this from the school standpoint. He made it very clear when he canceled the rest of the school year, don't expect that come mid-August, suddenly all the doors are going to open and we're going to all be back in school, because we don't know what COVID-19 is going to look like by then. So he's already tipped his hand, and some of the stuff I've seen coming out of the Department of Education kind of hints at the same thing, is don't assume that come mid-August, the doors are going to open and children are going to flood in. So that poses challenges from an institutional standpoint of our old program, where we monitored attendance, our school liaisons watched attendance, worked closely with students. It may not necessarily fit right out of the gate, because we don't know what school's going to look like August, September, October. So that would be one of the concerns from the court standpoint, is we don't know what that institution of the school is going to look like. We as a court institution know that we are not going to look like we did 6 months ago.
April is absolutely correct. Fall 2020, for that matter, the entire 2020-2021 school year is unknown. We don't know when we're going to resume face-to-face meetings. We don't know if, once we do resume those face-to-face meetings, if it will be necessary for us to enact virtual learning again at some point in time throughout next school year. So for us, it is truly a matter of saying, okay, let's try to get a handle on things right now. Let's try to use some of this time that is at our disposal to try to do some planning for fall, for winter, and for spring, in case we do have to either A, continue with an extended virtual learning session or remote learning, or once we return, if we have to do a combination or blended type form of virtual learning and face-to-face learning. So for us, we really don't know. All we can do is do what we can with what we have. And that is try to continue to be positive, to try to be upbeat and support our students, support our staff members, as well as our community, and encourage one another during these most trying and difficult times. Because there is a lot of uncertainty, and uncertainty promotes and creates a lot of fear and doubt. And when those two emotions are mixed together, oftentimes poor decisions end up being made. And so what we want to do before we allow our emotions to take over is we want to just try to be reserved and cautious in our approach and put together a solid game plan that will at least help us be successful for the present moment.
And that's a great transition. For other courts who are doing some future planning right now and looking for some new solutions going forward, can you tell a little bit about the partnership between the schools and the Delaware County Juvenile Court and how you use mediation to impact attendance?
Sure, I will jump in on that and realize our attendance mediation program, Dodie Davenport, my colleague, and I were trying to calculate. We think it is at least 16 or 17 years old in Delaware, certainly with Delaware City Schools. We have a section of our court basically devoted to attendance. We have staff members called school liaisons. They work directly with schools. One-on-one, they help monitor the attendance. They have access to PowerSchool, which is how attendance is recorded. The liaisons meet directly with students throughout the school year, trying to prevent that student ever becoming what is now called a habitual truant. They then call upon the mediators. We step in once that student has reached those statutory levels of habitual truancy. And then we set up a mediation with the goal in the mediation to work with school staff, family, and court staff, because the school liaison attends those mediations as well. And again, the goal is to sit around the table and say, what is going on? What supports need to be put in place? Our goal in those mediations is to come up with what is now called the student absence intervention plan. we know from talking with lots of other jurisdictions and, you know, 88 counties and multiple juvenile court jurisdictions, our program is fairly unique. A lot of jurisdictions don't have the financial resources to have a section of the court devoted to attendance. On the other hand, we've had lots of good conversations over the last 5 years, especially about what can some courts do to start some mediation programming working directly with the schools. And we see our court as being a resource to other courts. You know, we're always open to come up and watch us, come up and join us. We'll be glad to spend a whole day on the phone talking with you and talking through some possibilities.
And does someone from the school participate in the mediation as well?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, House Bill 410 requires not one, but two. One typically, and we'll use Delaware Hayes, typically we have an administrator, Dr. Bolden. We often have the school counselor there. Delaware goes above and beyond. We always, almost always have the assistant superintendent there as well. When it was Heidi Kegley, now our superintendent, she's the one that started that. And it was part of her absolute belief, which she has carried on in her administration, of attendance is not just a family issue, it is a school issue, it's a societal issue. So she takes a very proactive approach of, we, the school, need to be there as a presence, not to intimidate the other, you know, the family, but because to show that we are committed to this, and it's more than just lip service.
And our presence, I think that our presence in those mediations has truly done wonders, not only for the student, but for the trust that gets built between the family and the student. Understand that a lot of our students have had negative experiences with school for one reason or another. And so oftentimes, I'd say in most of our mediations, there is this initial confrontation or adversarial approach. And once we're able to allow a family to express their discontent with the schools and how we may have interacted with their families in the past, I then use that as an opportunity to say, I can't control what happened prior to my arrival, or I wasn't a part of that particular resolution. However, I am a part of the current process and resolution. Give me a chance. Yes, we made a mistake. We messed up. Let me apologize for my colleagues. But give me a chance to try to work with you and your family to make this right, to make this better. And so once we can have that come to Jesus type of moment, that aha type of moment, I think it disarms a lot of families. And at that point in time, we begin to work on establishing trust or rebuilding trust. And then we're able to move forward and get to some of the real issues, the crux of why students are absent. And again, Kate, I will say it is because of that strategic, because of that methodical approach that we employ, that we're able to say and stand on this premise that relationships are paramount in combating school attendance challenges for schools.
I just want to tag on to Adonis's comment about what it's like when that family walks in the room. As a mediator, the first words out of my mouth, because realize they received a letter from me, juvenile court letterhead, juvenile court envelope, saying there is a mediation meeting at Hayes High School at 1 o'clock on this day. The first words out of my mouth when the student and the family walk in, the first words are, you're not in trouble. Because going back to what Adonis said about broken trust and broken relationships, that's often, you see the family braced of, oh my God, here's juvenile court. Oh my God, here's Dr. Bolden. And that's why those are always my automatic words. You're not in trouble. This is to look for ways to support you to improve attendance.
Thank you so much for telling us all about attendance today and solutions that the schools are coming up with to address this problem, especially in the face of our new challenges with COVID-19. here's a bit I'd like to try at the end of every podcast that we do. It's called Two for Me and One for You. There will be two questions for the presenters and one question that they will have for you, the audience, as kind of a pop quiz to see if you are paying attention today. So my first question for the presenters is, what's an interesting attendance-related story you can share with us?
Donna, you want to tell one and then I'll tell one.
Oh my gosh, there's so many. You'll have to give me a moment. Obviously, I need to change the names and protect identities. Overall, I'll say this way. I won't give any specific examples, but I'll use a theme. I'll give a thematic example, if you will. Mutual understanding. Oftentimes, some of our mediations, again, it can become very tense and adversarial. When we are able to do our jobs effectively, when a parent or when a family is able to be open and honest and direct with us, we're able to leave that mediation with a sense of mutual understanding in that they're not trying to get you in trouble, and this particular side is not trying to just be difficult for the sake of being difficult. We're actually trying to help one another. And so in those moments, in those mediations, when we've given out personal cell phone numbers of individuals that they can use as resources, when we've extended additional school resources to families, it makes you feel good in that, okay, that's one case down and we've got several more cases to go, but I feel confident and I feel reassured in knowing that there's some positive momentum on our side moving forward.
Right. How about you, April?
Mine actually took place in another county district. And you got to realize the background pieces. I have an older car, and in the winter, the doors will freeze where you can open the car, but you can't make them shut and latch when you close them. So I use bungee cords. And I had to drive to Sunbury to Big Walnut High School, and a family came in, and it was about 10 degrees out. And as we started talking about what the issues were, one of the very first issues were transportation and unreliable vehicles. And I shared the story of the bungee cords. And you could see the family immediately relaxed because it's like, oh my gosh, here's somebody sitting on the other side of the table who has car issues. And we had a great mediation. The grandmother was there, the parents, the kid, we all came to a great plan. They exited feeling tremendously relieved. And my colleague out there, the assistant principal, Jim Hall, looked at me and says, why did you tell that story and embarrass yourself? And I said, Jim, first of all, it's true. And I said, second of all, did you see how they felt after I told that story? And he just rolled his eyes and walked out of the room. But it goes to what Adonna says. Sometimes you say something, you're looking for that connection. You're looking for a way to show them, I'm not the adversary, and I can hear you and see you where you are. This isn't about making you come to my level.
Love that. All right. Question two. Who is an amazing person who you know who's related to the attendance system or school attendance process who you think deserves a shout out on this podcast? Why do you appreciate them?
Well, I'll start off by answering that question in two ways. One, I will say an amazing person or the amazing people that I work with are actually all of the stakeholders, all of the families, my colleagues over at juvenile court, the school personnel, the district personnel, and the students. I think that when we're all together in the room at one time, working collaboratively, it's an amazing thing to see. So that's the PC response, right? So now being down.
I wasn't going to say that. I was just thinking it.
Yeah. That's the PC response. But honestly, man, this is now, I believe, my sixth year in the district. So I'm going to say at least my fourth or fifth year doing mediations. And I've worked with April, I've worked with Stacy and Doty and several other staff members from juvenile court. I enjoy all of those wonderful ladies from juvenile court, but especially my time with April and Stacy. Those two ladies go above and beyond the call of duty and making sure that families feel welcome and making sure that families have transportation and access to the meetings. They leave no stone unturned. And because of the different hats that I wear in the building, literally there are times where I may show up to a mediation right as it is scheduled or several moments after it has begun because I'm doing something else. And the ladies have confidence in me and I have confidence in them that as soon as I walk in, they've already started the beginning of that process, the explanation process, and it flows seamlessly after that. So they make my job a hell of a lot easier and I just thoroughly enjoy working with them.
Thank you. How about you, April?
Well, and I'm one, thank you, Adonis, a lot. I also have a PC response, but it's from the heart. Our court prides itself on this program, not because we want to boast about it, but because we're deeply committed to it. Stacy Blair, Vicki Hardwick, Gio Ross, Doty Davenport, Kira Crawford, you know, Robert Rice, who now runs our attendance docket, somewhat like a specialized docket, and frankly, our judge, David Hemanowski, for their commitment to this. And then reciprocal at the Delaware City Schools, Adonis, Heidi Kegley, Craig Heath, our assistant superintendent, their commitment to attendance. The ladies in the front office at Hayes High School, Susie especially, my gosh, they're all integral. There's no one person that stands out. Now my non-PC response is I've worked all across the county. Adonis is my favorite administrator ever. He is the one that I will bake a pie for at the drop of a hat.
You're on the pie list, Dr. Bolden.
He's on the pie list. He's that on is my amazing. Wall of pie recipients.
What can I say? Hey!
But he and I have very similar philosophies, and we have very similar goals when it comes to our students, and we have just meshed from the outset. I thoroughly, at some point I'm going to be stepping out of this job, and it's going to be hard to say goodbye to Adonis when I do that.
All right, and do you have a question? I'll leave it to April. Do you have a question for the audience for a knowledge check? What should they be able to, what's a question they should be able to answer after listening to this podcast today?
Well, it depends on whether my audience is a court audience or a school audience. So I'll answer for the court. I would say a court question knowledge check is, do we have someone on court staff who is knowledgeable about House Bill 410 and its obligations on the schools so that we as a court are not stepping on families when in fact we should be looking at our schools to say, why didn't you jump through the hoops?
All right. Any closing remarks here, Dr. Bolden? We're near the end here.
Sure. Again, I want to leave the listeners of this podcast with a terrific quote from Mr. Frederick Douglass. And that quote says, "It is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men." And one of the ways that we build strong children is through establishing meaningful relationships. We have a unique opportunity in front of us as stakeholders to build those meaningful relationships and establish that wonderful support system that we all need in order to be successful in life. Let's not squander this opportunity to get students, to get families, and to get our community on a level playing field so that everyone can experience the true American dream, and that is eating a piece of that successful pie.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone who's listening, for tuning in to Civility and Solutions. And thank you to Dr. Adonis Bolden and April Nelson. I hope that everyone out there will look forward, as I will, to our next podcast. Thank you, everyone out there who's working for justice. It's important work. Hope you keep at it.